Jonas, you were a part of the ride right off the start. You were one of the day one guys, and I was a day one guy. I remember I was on. I started here at 10 a.m. I was on from 10 to 12. They just slid me in.
Wow, I love
2
it.
Hours. They said, that's about it. And I remember at noon, they were going to call it, I think it was That's Hockey at Noon is what they started with. It didn't last long. And Coolius was in.
Cooley That's was right. Oh, yeah. I was on the show with him.
Were you on the show with him at some point? I'm sure you were that whole spring and throughout the summer. And Cooley was the guy. And Bobby Mack, I remember, was like the first in-studio guy. They brought in Bob McKenzie to be a part of day one. Kind of overshadowed the guy that was on from 10 a.m. to noon. I can't lie. I had to keep promoting that Bob's going to be on at noon. Here he is, our TSN hockey outsider, Bob McKenzie. Do you remember that, Bob?
No.
I'm telling you, it's a true story.
That says more about my age. No, you know what? Now that you told the whole story, I'm like, oh, okay, okay. I kind of remember that.
Yep.
They might have brought me back in for the drive hour. I'm not even sure.
Yes.
They didn't have me on the. I'm not sure why they didn't have me on the 10 a.m. show with the new guy. Other than as you well know that you know. You're on the 10 a.m. shift at the radio station.
No, it wasn't good. Believe me, I wasn't. It was funny because day one, it was Richards was in the morning, and there was, you know, everyone was celebrating that we're on, and there's cameras around. I remember I went on at 10 o'clock, and like the CP24 camera guy left. He's like, I'll come back at noon. I'm like, well, I'm going on. Like, if you want, I'll have something for you. I don't know what I'm going to say. But that wasn't the best introduction. Awesome. To the building or the industry.
That's awesome. 10 years. Wow, seems like yesterday.
Well, you've done a lot of these over the years on every station throughout the country. How many hits do you think you've done in your career?
Oh, man, I don't know. I used to, like, probably average 23 a week.
Right.
No, probably about 20 a week when I was in my prime. So.
Wow. Wow. That's a pretty good run. Well, I was fist bumping, I guess it was Sunday night. Because, you know, there's all this stuff going on and people are wondering what kind of trades are happening. And, the focal points at that point, I believe, were maybe Foligno had been flipped. Maybe Riddick had already been on his way here. I'm not sure.
No, and Riddick hadn't happened until it was later Sunday night.
Okay, so later Sunday night. And you know, people are focused on Hall and they're wondering what's going on. And in sweeps the outsider with the Jeff Carter news. And no one had Carter on the radar. Like, how did that happen? Because you jumped on that one, and everyone's like, oh, Jeff Carter's going to Pittsburgh. Bob's back in business.
If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Right. Absolutely. That was a good one, though.
Yeah, that was a good one, because otherwise it was a pretty half-hearted effort by me yesterday. But nevertheless, it was a pretty muted trade deadline period. But it was fun to get back in the saddle for a day and hang out in Studio 9.
Yes.
And contribute to the cause a little bit, and now today I'm going back to being the outsider.
Well, I mean, in terms of that deal, the Carter deal, Pittsburgh is giving me some flashbacks here, Bob. Like in 16-17, when they went back-to-back, they were obviously at the forefront because of who's on the team. But they just keep winning games, and they keep plugging along, and now they bring in a veteran guy like Carter who's got his cups, and I don't think they're getting enough attention.
You know, it's funny when the season, you know, I remember last year in the bubble return to play. Let's go back even further. Last spring, when the season got paused, prior to the season being paused, I kind of thought that Pittsburgh was, you know, a sneaky threat. That Washington in that division was good And, you know, Boston and Tampa were the clear class of the Eastern Conference. But I thought, you know what? And part of it was because Jimmy Rutherford told me that he had a real good feel about his group when things were paused last year. And then the pause happened, and I thought, they still might be for the return to play. And they came back, and they obviously got dusted by Montreal in the first round, and they didn't look good at all. And everybody said, well, that's it. The window has closed. And there was part of me that thought that, and there was also part of me that thought, I don't know, maybe because they're an older team that relies on Crosby and Malkin and Letang and the veteran guy so much that this whole return to play in the middle of the summer thing just wasn't their bag, and that maybe that was it. And then when the season began, I thought to myself, you know, Jimmy Rutherford liked them because they were quicker. And he did admit that the X factor was going to be the goaltending. And when they got off to a really tough start at the beginning of the year and the goaltending wasn't very good and then Jimmy resigned, and it just had that feeling of like, man, this is it. The window closed. They missed their chance for a third one in recent memory, a fourth one overall. And that's it. And then yet suddenly they got healthy. They started to get some half decent goaltending. And to your point, now when you look at that division, as much as Washington's really good and the Islanders will be lights out, you kind of look at Pittsburgh a little bit and you're like, you never know. I wouldn't bet against them either. So it'll be interesting to see if they can, that division's probably as good as it gets in the National Hockey League right now. And it'll be tough for anybody to come out of that, whether it's the Islanders or Washington or Pittsburgh or whichever team makes it after that, because I know Philly's been obviously a big disappointment.
Yeah, I was going to go back to kind of like the deadline and kind of how, I guess, quiet it was. And, the contributing factor, everyone had laid it out. You've got a flat cap. You've got money in, money out. You've got, COVID and the border situation. You've got teams that are kind of hanging on, thinking, okay, maybe if we sneak in, we can make a run. Like, it didn't seem like from your perspective, when you're doing your research and talking to managers, did it seem like a different deadline as just far as the narrative and the thought process for and also throw in expansion too.
Did it just
seem like a different, because every guy I was talking to was like, I don't even know what the marketplace is going to look like. We're just going to kind of see as we approach. Like, what were you getting from your sense from a lot of the people that you spoke with?
Yeah, I think that if I'd done any research, they would have told me that, all that. But but having said that, you're absolutely right. Although what I would say, too, is it really depends on the team. So, I mean, if you were talking to Kyle Dubas approached this deadline the same as any general manager of a team any year who right. feels like they've got a legit chance to win and maybe a better than average chance. And maybe the least case a little bit because of the playoff structure, the fact that we know there's going to be a Canadian team in the conference finals, in the final four. And Toronto's thinking to themselves, how well they've played this year, why not us? And if that's the case, let's do everything we can to make sure we win those first two rounds. And then let's do everything we can at the deadline here to give ourselves the best chance to win in the third round and put the Toronto Maple Leafs in the Stanley Cup final. So, in Tampa as a defending champion, they weren't sitting there saying, we won it last year. I think it's time to hoard first-round picks, and let's not worry about plugging a hole on the blue line by getting David Savard. Julian Breesville was like, hell with that. Let's in for a dime, in for a dollar. Let's blow another first-round pick. We did it last year with the Goodrows and the Colemans, and we won, and it was great, so let's do it again. So there were a handful, but there's only so many teams that find themselves in that situation. And so, the St. Louis Blues are sitting there and they're looking at Colorado and they're looking at Vegas and they're looking at Minnesota and they're looking at the way they've played lately. And so Doug Armstrong, he wasn't in the mode where he was like, well, we've mostly sucked lately, so why don't we sell a bunch of guys? And we won the cup last year. If we have to take a step back and replenish the draft picks and whatever, we'll do that. He didn't want to do that because right before the deadline, they won a couple of games and looked good doing it, and yet he didn't want to go out and buy either. So it was kind of twixt and between a little bit. But so as I said, there's a handful of teams that approach this deadline the same as they would any other deadline, and I would put the Leafs in Tampa and Boston for that matter in that category, and that's because these are teams that believe they have a chance right now to win the cup. And in the case of Boston, certainly, and to some degree Tampa, they think, the window's not going to stay open here forever. Marchand's not getting any younger. Bergeron's not getting any younger. Tampa's cap situation's not getting any better. So let's do whatever we can. And in the Leafs situation, they're looking at the Matthews and Marner and Nylander contracts and the way the team is structured right now and saying, you know what? It doesn't matter. We've only got 5 or 6 picks over the next couple of years. We're trying to make hay right now. Let's do it.
With Bob McKenzie, in terms of the Leafs, we had this conversation earlier, Bob, about how they're really trying to find players that bring a different ingredient to their team, and they're compensating for what went wrong in the past couple of years, or it seems that way anyway, where they were a team loaded for skill, loaded for success in the regular season, but didn't have that, you know, conventional, grit, intangible type ingredient for the playoffs. And over the past 12 months, they've added Thornton, they've added Simmons. Now they bring
almost all they've added.
Exactly. It's almost all they've added. Even Riley Nash, if he's going to be in. Ben Hutton, you know, he doesn't, not necessarily the toughest guy in the world, but right. Bringing in Bogosian. Do you think they've overcompensated here, or do you think this is the right plan here for the Leafs?
Well, I wouldn't say they've overcompensated simply because there's only so many of them that can play anyway. So, there might be some unhappy campers by the time it's all said and done. Because, you know, when you look at the Leafs, you know, you got Matthews and Marner on the top pair. You got Tavares and Nylander on the second pairing up front. You've got now interchangeable left wingers who can mix and match and move around. So that's, you know, Hyman, Galchenyuk, and Foligno, now Foligno. And so, you know, in a perfect world, Galchenyuk continues to play as well as he's playing, and he gets one of those top two-line spots. You can flip a coin and decide whether it's Hyman or Foligno and what's the best fit for the other second line top two spot on left wing. But I mean, even on this Leaf team, the way they're structured and the importance that Sheldon Keefe attaches to the third line, and you know, and Hyman is a huge part of that, and you know, and Engvall and Mikheyev. So it's not a demotion if whoever ends up on that third line. It's more a testament to whoever's on that third line can really help drive things. And so, but you know, so there's your top nine basically set. So then it's a matter of, well, you got Spets and you got Thornton and you got Kerfoot, and that's been the de facto fourth line. But then what are you going to do with Simmons, and what are you going to do with Riley Nash, and how are you going to mix and match all these guys? And, you know, and does that mean Jumbo gets replaced on the fourth line and he's suddenly out of a job, or, you know, what's going to happen there? And that'll all come out in the wash, and I don't think the Leafs are particularly worried about that, and it might be a storyline for the media if somebody like a Simmons or somebody like a Jumbo or you know, any of the other depth guys they've got there, if there's no room for them. But, you know, that's why they were cleaning up, get Barabanov out of there and anybody else who's not along for the ride.
Well, they got another one tonight and a few more down the stretch, but we know what's coming in the playoffs. It feels like it's going to be Toronto, Edmonton, Montreal, Winnipeg, and it'll be a fun ride. It's always great to have you on, Bob. We'll do it again hopefully soon. I have no idea when we have you back on. That's for you to make that decision, basically, but we'll get you back on whenever you're ready to come back on.
No problem. Now, was Jonas on their show, or was he?
Hi, Bob.
There's Jonas. Jonas. Are they not letting you talk?
Well, I couldn't. We have like this little text chain, and I just couldn't sneak in. In time.
Yeah.
Jonas is writing his next article for The Athletic. Every hour he has to have something new online.
Yeah. So. Any ideas, Bob?
That's right. Jonas is out there selling subscriptions like it's his job.
Yeah, it is. Well, that's the way it works now. Anyway, Bob, we'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right. Great to talk to you guys, including you as well, Jonas.
See you, Bob.
Happy 10th anniversary, man.
Yeah, exactly. There's Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider.